Hey listeners, it's Tim here. Just a quick note to invite you to join us live in Sydney for our in-person two-day Top Music Live conference over the 15th and 16th of April 2026. I am so excited to finally be putting together another dynamic, inspirational, life-changing experience for music teachers after the success of our Piano Pivot Live conference in 2020. You'll enjoy thought-provoking keynotes, live teaching demonstrations, interactive workshops, fun, movement, roundtable masterminds, and our famous implementation sessions to make sure everyone gets the most from their investment. Early bird ticket pricing is now available and it includes all catering. Head over to topmusiclive.com for all the details. Prices increase really, really soon. I can't wait to see you there.
I kept getting students who were following all those method books, they were following everything I was saying, and yet they weren't creating music and they weren't reading very well. And the question kept popping up, how do I get these kids to read music? And I mean, it became a major issue for me. And that when I found this program, it answered the question and more. I had no idea. And I've never gone back to that traditional mode since then.
You're watching Tim Topham TV, the piano teaching podcast, and this is episode number 61. Hi everyone, welcome back for another episode of the Tim Topham TV Piano Teaching Podcast. Great to have you along, and I do hope that you're going to enjoy today's episode, which is the first in this month's theme of early childhood teaching. And today's sponsor is actually Music Garden, which we're going to find out more about today. Music Garden prepares children to play the piano. Playing the piano or any instrument succeeds most quickly when the body, ear, and family are well prepared. For both children and teachers, Music Garden is the best preparation for playing an instrument. They offer a holistic, age-appropriate curricula designed specifically for the various stages of a child's early years. More than just entertainment, Music Garden teachers present music in a way that appeals to parents and their children and nurtures children's natural inclination towards music, movement, and learning. Each course includes favorite songs and dances, which progress along a thoughtfully designed path of music and movement. This begins with the smallest of babies and goes through group or partner piano instruction. You can head to the show notes page to find out more, and they're at timtopham.com/episode61. I'm really happy that Music Garden have decided to sponsor today's episode because, in fact, we're going to be exploring their program with one of my inner circle members, Ellen Johansson. And you're going to be blown away by what Ellen does with her students and the way she goes about her teaching of early years. And I know you're going to learn a lot from it. And we've actually included not only a number of links on the show notes page to her teaching, but we've embedded a couple of videos of her in action in this very podcast. So if you haven't checked out the video and you're just listening to this, this might be one that you'd like to also get access to the video of, and you can do that through the show notes page. Now, just before we jump in to the interview, I did want to mention a couple of reminders. Firstly, this month, I'm giving $100 off an annual membership to my Inner Circle community. That's $100 off for life. As long as you're a member, obviously, you'll stay the same price all the way through. Currently, the price is $3.99 US. It'll now be $2.99 if you use the coupon code TTTV Podcast. I've also just redesigned the podcast page at timtopham.com/podcast, and you can actually read some of the reviews that have been coming in. We've only got 5-star reviews. We've got a whole heap of them. Thank you very much if you're one of the people that's taken the time to review. I do appreciate it, and make sure you check it out when you're there. And finally, I'm really excited to have been recognized as an innovator in education and podcasting and now listed as part of the Education Podcast Network, which is all about podcasts by educators for educators. And I'm pretty stoked to be listed with some of the podcasts that are there. So do go and check it out if you're interested. The other podcasts in this network are fantastic. They're all about disruptive movement forward, futuristic planning, innovation, and entrepreneurship. And I think you're going to really enjoy it. That listing of networks, the other podcast in the network is at edupodcastnetwork.com. And we'll be hearing more about that as time goes by. Sounds like the title of a song. All right, let's get straight into it. Ellen Johansson, as I said, is one of my Inner Circle community members. She shares so much of her expertise in our forums, and I'm so glad that she was able to do that in a more public way on today's podcast. Here is my interview with Ellen. Ellen, welcome to the show. It's so great to finally have an Inner Circle community member here to share ideas about one of these topics on the podcast. Great to have you.
I'm so glad to be here.
And look, and you're one of our, I think you're one of our founding members, but you're also one of our most prolific members. I don't think you've missed a mastermind in the community, and you've given so many great ideas to so many people about their teaching and feedback. So thank you so much for all that you do in the Inner Circle. And I know we're going to learn heaps from you today about early childhood teaching. So let's get straight into it. Can you tell us a little bit about your current studio? We can see the space behind you. You've got a great setup there. How many kids? What kind of ages? What does it look like?
All right. So my studio is in a resort town called East Hampton, and that's 90 miles outside of New York City. And it's a rather dysfunctional population. We have winter students, a winter population, and then we have a summer population. And so we go from 2,000 in my village to 115,000 people in the summer.
Whoa, that's crazy.
It's wild. We're known for our ocean, we're known for our beaches, and we're known for tremendous houses along the beach.
I'm picturing that series, Revenge. That was Hamptons, wasn't it?
Yes.
From a few years ago. I'm sure that doesn't really go on, but I remember the houses.
I think it does, but that's a whole nother podcast. I presently have 52 students, and they share classes. But I also wanted to mention, I have, with those many of those students, I have a parent accompanying them. So when I sat down and thought about this, I also have 36 family members who attend the classes weekly. And so there are a lot of people who come to my little studio once a week. Don't tell my husband. My youngest right now is 5 months old. And the oldest student, if you don't count my adults, my oldest student is presently 14. My 18-year-old just went off to college for music technology. And I do have some adults that are in the 80s. So I teach all ages.
Wow, you really do. That is the full spectrum.
Let's see. The groups that I teach, they go in ages of birth through three. Then I do a group for three-year-olds. I do a group for four-year-olds. I do a group for 5 and 6-year-olds. I do a group for 6 and 7-year-olds. And that's my pre-piano program. And then for my 7+ or the older sixes up to 9, I do group piano lessons that basically follow a curriculum that goes for 3 years. Those graduates then move into my private or they might do companion lessons.
What's a companion lesson?
A companion lesson would be one where the two would share the same time, and then they could do duets and they could play games and, you know, they can do all sorts of things. I also have what I call piano partner lessons. When I can't pull enough children in for a group, I'll take two. And they will do the similar curriculum, but I adapt it for two. So
great. And so does most of, we'll get more into the detail of what you do with the youngest children, but is there a point where it flips over from being general music to actually we're working at the piano now? And if so, what kind of age is that?
Ah, that's a good question. I wouldn't call it general music. I would call it early childhood music and movement. Because when a teacher might think general music, like they get in a keyboard to sixth grade public school, but this isn't anywhere like this. This is we're setting that foundation, and then we're setting the bridge or the link towards formal music study.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that for that young child brain, we're beginning to do sequential music making when they're about five and six, where we're beginning to build and layer different concepts.
Mm-hmm.
But we're basing that on a strong movement and oral base foundation that's happening between age 0 and 5.
Got it.
Yeah, and then I'll finally bring out that piano, and they were so thrilled the other day. They had their first piano day, and those kids came in, they were like, there's keyboards. They're so filled with that they finally have reached that point where we've added that component in.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so let's, the experience you've got over so many age groups, I'm almost exhausted just listening to what you do, because my specialty isn't early childhood, which is why I'm so happy to interview someone like you who knows this inside out and does it every day. So let's just talk about this term early childhood. What are we actually talking about?
You know, I had to sit back and think about this. The Early Childhood Music and Movement Association includes the ages from birth through 7 years of age. Mm-hmm. And this is the time before what many people call the concrete brain begins to take over, when a child is beginning to accumulate facts, those black and white things. This is a quarter note. This is a half note. This is an A, you know, and they're beginning to add names. We call that the grammatical part of the world. But before the age of seven, the brain is very different for a young child. It is more of an experiential kind of brain where they're experiencing the world from moment to moment to moment, and they process the world based on those experiences. So a great example of this is if you ask a young child, you know, when is the next time is music class? They don't have a concept of this time because everything is just a moment by moment experience. And so music has a dramatic effect on that young child as a result. So again, it has to do with the type of brain that we're working with. And the very important part that brain needs to learn through movement as its primary motive of learning.
Got it. The classes are
music and movement, not just music class.
So there's no point getting a room full of three-year-olds and telling them to sit down in front of a keyboard or a piano and let's learn music. That's just not going to work, right? Even I know that.
Yeah. And I'm even surprised when I hear teachers doing it with four-year-olds and five-year-olds. I mean, it's sort of like I remember doing other curriculums, and I studied every curriculum as I was learning, and I was always amazed that they would take a curriculum that was designed for the 7 year old and they would just slow it down for the younger children. Mm. And that's not really what young children need. In fact, what I've discovered is that if children move appropriately, they can then focus and listen.
Got it.
And that is one of the cornerstones of my studio is I'm teaching them to focus and to listen. And when they have those skills, they can go anywhere. So it's one of those amazing parts of learning this and teaching this curriculum.
Mm, beautiful. All right, so let's talk about this curriculum because I know people are going to be going, yes, I want to do this better, or I want to start teaching early childhood, but I don't know where to start. Tell us about the program that you use and what it offers to music teachers.
All right, so today I primarily teach a program called Music Garden. And Music Garden was created by basically two teachers. One was Lorna Heige, and the other was a neuro-linguistic specialist named Audrey Sillick.
And, okay, neuro-linguistic, so brain language.
Yeah, and she worked in a Montessori school in Toronto.
Okay.
And the two of them brought what everybody knows as kinder music. They were the original creators of that program. And years later, they then sold that business and the name and created a Music Garden because they wanted a teacher resource program that would evolve and link the early childhood music and movement experience into formal study, mm-hmm. i.e. piano. So if a teacher wants to go in and become a Music Garden teacher, I look through it because in my world, you had to go to a training and you had to sign up for the training, and we had a live class in the training. And Lorna hired expert trainers. These were university professors and people who really knew not only the curriculum, but knew the philosophy of early childhood. And those people are still there. Their trainers are, I think, the best in the country. And you've probably met them because they are always the top speakers in all of the conventions.
Right. I might not know that they're music garden teachers, people, but I've probably seen them, yeah.
Probably sat for them. Anyway, so if someone wants to become a music garden teacher in today's world with all the technology, they actually can go to the music garden website, and it says to become a teacher. And then they actually have a step-by-step progress, which includes webinars and introductions. And then you move through, you can move through webinars, or you can still go to live trainings. So I have a co-teacher who just, I talked her into becoming a teacher, and she's done some of the trainings, and now she has a provisional license. What's great about this program, though, is that the material is available to you to use. You don't have to, like, join a franchise. You don't have to wait until a head teacher gives you the material. The material is available as a teacher's resource, and you can use it in any form that you wish. So you can use it in a private studio like I do. You can use it in a preschool. You could use it in a public school. You can use it, it's just as many ways as you can think of.
Mm. So. And we should say, too, that neither of us are affiliated with this program. We're just exploring it as a great program that's out there. So, you know, we're not getting any kickbacks or anything. And the company name is Music Garten, MusicGarten, if you're looking it up online or want to write it down, Music Garten, which must be German or kind of German looking. Not really sure.
It is. And it's fun to teach. That's why I do it. I love it. I love the flow of it. I love that it covers all the bases. And it answered the most important question for me when I was looking for it 20 years ago. And I was frustrated as a traditional piano teacher. I kept getting students who were following all those method books. They were following everything I was saying, and yet they weren't creating music, and they weren't reading very well. And the question kept popping up, how do I get these kids to read music? And I mean, it became a major issue for me. And that when I found this program, it answered the question and more. I had no idea, and I've never gone back to that traditional mode since then.
So do you mean you've seen the result of the Music Garten program in your early childhood kids when they come through to the piano and as they're older? You can see difference?
Oh, yes, and especially if I get a transfer student who's never done this program, and then I'll get my own graduates. And I guess the best way I can say is when I'm working with the graduates or even the children that are in the third year of my Music Garden keyboard program, I'm dealing with whole musicians. You know how we talk a lot about improvisation and using chords and lead sheets and having the children create? Mm. For these children, it is their natural mode of thinking.
Wow.
And they're coming from a totally different place in their brain. Everything is oral, everything. I just have to start seeing the melody, and they just continue it. they have no problem playing what they hear. In fact, sometimes I have to kind of say, well, you really need to look at the music there, because they'll just go off and start creating. And so they can go into all sorts of places. Many of my graduates who are pianists, I'll hear later that they're in choruses, and they'll come back and say, well, we have all the lead parts, so I have the solo part. And I'm like, well, I'm not giving you singing lessons, but their voice is so strong and they're so in tune that the vocal teachers and the chorus teachers just select them. And they also have no issue with doing it in front of people.
Mm.
Because they're sharing music every single week in a group setting. So it doesn't occur to them that there's anything wrong with that or weird. They just, that's what they do. And they can also improvise jazz blues. They can improvise, you just ask them and they're off.
there's certainly no doubt that starting students young in an oral and singing kind of atmosphere is the way that musicians are built, in my opinion. There's so much evidence to say that is just so important from a young age. And I remember my when I was first starting to teach as a piano teacher, and I was getting help from my own teacher, my own childhood teacher who had retired and everything. And she said, you can tell the students whose parents sang to them as children because, and this was her opinion, of course, there's no scientific basis to this, but they all, her opinion of that was that the mother singing to the child and being immersed in that kind of vocal tradition, for want of a better word, does help the children's ears. They have this natural ability to hear pitch. And I've always thought about that. So I think this kind of a program just makes so much sense. And I can imagine it. You can see the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember, I mentioned I have my parents in the room every week. So they're singing. At least they're trying to sing. many of them never sang as children. And many of them are a little nervous about opening up enough to sing with their children and dance with their children. And when they break through, it's kind of exciting to hear that they need to sing in tune as well.
Flossie, what is on your hand? Round and round the garden went the teddy bear. One step, two step, tickling your hand. Oh, what's on your other hand? Round and round the garden went the teddy bear. One step, two step, tickling your ear.
Oh, Flossie, look what's on her foot.
Round and round the garden went the little mouse. One step, two step,
into the little mouse. Uh-oh, here comes that mouse.
Okay, so let's go on and talk about some of the challenges of early childhood teaching, particularly if you've never done it before or just getting started.
It is a learning curve. And I'd say it looks easier than it is. I'm going to say it that way. Because if you are used to a one-on-one, you're going to be in for a big shock when suddenly you're in a room with eight toddlers and parents, and suddenly you are in charge of the flow of the room, the greeting, the pace, keeping the kids engaged, adapting to the various things going on in the room. There is so much happening in a half an hour. I was just thinking this morning, I taught a half an hour toddler class, and these toddlers were all over the place. One was checking out an outlet. Another one, let's see. Someone brought a 5-month-old baby. And so that, of course, one child wanted to go and play with her nose and,
having watched the video of you teaching, you must be utterly exhausted after a few of them, particularly if you do a few in the row. I would be anyway.
Well, in the beginning, in the first 5 years, I would literally count the minutes. Oh, it's almost 30 minutes. But now that I've taught her for over 20 years, I have to be careful that I stay because I can add so much more. And that's what great about getting to know over 800 songs. When something doesn't work, something else is going to pop into my head.
So 800 songs. You reckon you've got 800 songs just ready to go in your head?
All categorized.
Wow.
Sitting songs, standing songs, moving songs, finger plays, tapping songs, instrument plays, drum song.
Wow. I had no idea.
Oh, it's amazing. And then, of course, there's a core repertoire that the music stays pretty much the same. This core that comes through the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 program. And then we play those pieces on the keyboard. So there's one song that the kids absolutely adore. And if I hear it one more time, I think my ears are going to fall off. It's Mouse, Mousey, in the housey, hurry. Hurry do, for the kitty in the housey will be chasing you. Run! And There's a story when they're 5 and 6 about Dick Whittingham and who was the mayor lord of London, and he has a cat, and the cat goes after mice. We sing it there. There's a point when we do it as a circle game. There's a point when we do it as a game, which is a run after each other game. You can only imagine cat and mouse game. Mm. There's a point when they're playing bars and they're singing the words "can't catch me" because you gotta have kids catch each other. And then finally, when we bring it to the keyboard, those children have heard that song since they were 3.
Mm.
And as I'm teaching them, they're already figuring it out. They've got those patterns so clear and the rhythm so clear. Because think about that song. It's got the so, me, Joe. It's got those.
I was just thinking it's very triadic or chordal, isn't it?
It's triadic. And so, you know, we'll be teaching that chord, and they'll be teaching the hand position in D major, by the way. And then they'll be playing that. And really, when we get to the keyboard, it's just a component of something much bigger. You know, they're just wiggling those fingers. And for those few who can't do that yet, they might just do this. You know? Mouse, mousey, in the housey, which we know is accompanying.
Yeah, absolutely.
So even if we get a child who may never, ever play that melody, I will get children who will do that and sing with themselves in the setting. And think about the skill set. And not doing this. Mouse, mousey, in the housey. Right?
Yeah.
And yet, big children will do that. But, and that's fine. You know, you take them at all levels and slide them up and down. So.
Yeah. Fantastic. I was just thinking back to, you know, zero. I think one of your age groups was 0 to 3. Is that right?
Yeah.
I'm just wondering. I'm picturing a room of kids just wandering all over the place. And I would look at that and go, you know, are they really? What are they absorbing from that? Are they not too young?
Well, now that's a very good question, because in the actual Music Garden curriculum, it's actually 0 through 18 and 18 through 3. And I lately have had a tough time getting parents to agree to bring their babies in. But when I have all babies, and I'm talking about having a class with 3 lap babies, 3 sit-up crawling babies, maybe 3 early walkers, really that class is more of a parent education where they're learning how to incorporate music into their life. And more importantly, I'm having them start to do what's called an external steady beat. So even from the beginning, as we're singing, were you ever in Quebec, stowing timber on a deck, they're keeping a steady beat with that child on their lap. And, you know, children aren't born with that steady beat.
Moving the child, you mean?
Moving the child up and down on their lap, or maybe side to side. And then we do all of these things through, and they pick up these children and they dance and they rock and they float and they do finger games where they touch different parts of their bodies. And then at the very end of that class, we start to bring out instruments. And the first thing those children do is they put it into their mouths. So they specialize instruments that are only theirs. They get sticks and rattles. So I like to keep that class separate, but economy and reality has hit my studio and I've had to combine it, which is very tricky.
Mm.
I always focus towards the toddler because the toddler is the middle of the world. To them, the world swirls around a toddler.
So we're talking 2, 3, 4 year olds?
18 months through 2.5.
Okay.
Because 18 months is when they can do this, you know, they can take a bell and they can keep a steady beat. And before that, they might do it a little bit, but by then they're really, you know, they can start doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll bring out sticks and I'll ask the toddlers, you know, what's another way we can tap? Like this morning we did, hey, Jim along, Josie, hey, Jim along, Joe, hey, tap them, Josie. And most of the time, the parents are keeping that steady beat with their sticks.
Mm.
And the children, they're watching a community effort of making music. And then they actually start doing it, and they start showing me other ways to play with their sticks. And so they get engaged when they're engaged, and then when they're not, they walk away.
Right, yeah.
And so you get to learn this kind of in and out and knowing when to put things down and get everybody up and get dancing and then bring them down to the floor and do a lullaby and bring them up and do a walk and stop, that sort of thing. Now, a three-year-old will be less often in this class because usually the three-year-old's coming because they had no choice. Mom has a two-year-old and a five-month-older.
Mm.
So they can't leave that three-year-old home. So we call that a mixed-age class. It's a compromise, and my brain is constantly going, okay, what can I do for the five-month-older? What can I do for the two-year-old? What can I do for the three-year-old? So for the three, I'm going to verbally ask him, what other ways can you use these sticks? For the two-year-old, I'm just saying, look at me, use my sticks. And for the little one, they've got it in their mouth. And I might have a parent, like, you may want to gently tap the sticks so they can feel the vibration in their jawbone.
Yep.
Yeah, so you've got to be ready to adapt very quickly in the 0 to 3. And it's not for someone who's just going to sit back.
No, as you can see from your videos, you are on the whole time. And you're singing almost constantly too, I noticed. Yeah.
Yes.
Is one of the videos you've got of students using percussion?
I will look and see. That would be interesting.
Yeah, because we could...
You know, I'll tell you what, if I don't have one, we've been exploring the drum. And this morning, usually what I do in the toddler class is each child gets a drum, or I bring a separate drum around and they experience it. And then I bring a big drum out. But in my keyboard class, again, I can show you that. They're all drumming, and as they're drumming on separate drums, I'm working on hand position, on playing below the nail. I'm looking at wrists that are supple. I'm using beat and subdivision of beat. I'm doing, and I'm using the Gordon system of rhythm, so they're learning do and do day. Oh, and we play an old rec game with the drum where I will play a rhythm such as. And they have to play it back. And then we'll do that a few times. And then I ask them for the language. What's the name of that rhythm? And my hope is that they'll say do day. So, yeah, I can definitely put one together. Just give me a week. Or I'll look on my YouTube and see what I got.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
I'm going to do whatever I'm doing.
I was thinking as you were saying some of this stuff that it sounds a little bit like it's got some ORF kind of concepts in it too. And in back in episode 45, Vashti Somerville was talking about ORF and demonstrating that and this kind of tapping and clapping and using instruments and things. Have I made the right connection there, or is it? It's
yeah,
yeah.
You made a right connection. Yes, when Lorna. Created this program, she took the best from all of the philosophies.
Yeah, it sounds like that's exactly right.
So you've got Gordon going on, you've got ORF going on, you've got some Kodai going on, you've got Laban going on, you've got large motor muscle movement, you've got small motor muscle movement. I mean, this program, what sets it off again, or what I love about it, is that it takes all of this stuff and makes it a practical tool for the teacher.
Mm.
And that's what I love, is that I don't have to sit at every weekend and create new lesson plans every weekend. I have a basic lesson suggestion that has a movement forward, and I'm pretty assured that the concepts are going to continue to be developed in that motion. And then I have the freedom to expand it or remove a song if I don't like it. You know, there's some songs if I sing them one more time. And then there's some, where my ear just goes, oh, wait a minute, we need to add this song. Or I could add a poem, or I can add an imaginative story. I get, like last week, the children, the threes, we went to the store to buy a blow up swimming pool. And we had to blow it up, and then we put it out, and I said, well, there's something missing in the pool, and all the children went, oh, there's no water. Now, you know, there's nothing in the room. Yeah. And they run over, they bring the hose, and they sprayed it in, and then it was too cold, and I put my elbow in, oh, it's too cold, and we added hot water, and then we dove in, and we swam around, and the parents are looking there, and there's nothing in the room. And and I'll just keep going. I think my favorite was one time we were taking a nature walk across in the middle of my studio. And I said, oh, look down. What do I see? I'm not sure. And I looked down on the floor. There was nothing there. And the children came around and one said, I think it's blue. And the other one said, I'm sure it's a butterfly. And the other one said, no, it's a caterpillar. And the parents are looking in the back going, what is
I love it.
I don't know.
I think I'm right in thinking that this probably keeps you feeling young, Ellen. Would that be right? Maybe it makes you feel exhausted and old, but there's something about the imagination that keeps you young.
Well, there are my two martini classes, I have to admit.
Martini classes, what's that?
Those are the classes where you go out of the class saying, I know we got through it, but I haven't a clue how it happened.
And I need a martini now. Oh, that's brilliant. Now, do you need to be a good singer to work effectively with this age group?
I think you need to be able to sing in tune. Do you need to be a good singer? I remember a singing teacher at one of a convention saying, I am amazed that the singers here are all in tune, but they have such a strong mid range between usually ding, you know, somewhere. This is for a female voice. Mm. We love men come because they bring in a whole new, you know, part. But strengthening that part of our voice makes it so much easier to get lower and higher. And so when we're singing in that area, the children get used to singing in that area, which is so powerful for them. Mm. Because then, you know, C is a little low, and you hear so many choruses where they bring it down to G, and it's like, oh my gosh, they're all groveling. and if they could just keep it in that mid-range for children. And of course, children can go higher. But yeah, I think if you don't have a great voice, you will develop it just out of the fact that you're going to be singing so much.
Mm, yeah. And male voices would work
yes,
as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I should connect you with Steve Ream. He was Teacher of the Year years ago. He has now 9 children.
Sorry, he has 9 of his own children.
9 of his own children. And if you Google him, Steve Ream, he's always taught music garden, and he has raised all of his children to be full body musicians, and they sing in harmony, all 8 or 9, I think they're up to 9, and you can see them, they perform all over the Midwest, and it's amazing to listen to the quality. Not only that, but they play piano and violin and cello. It's sort of like a Swiss fam,
Sound of Music family.
Sound of Music, except they're so much better. So check him out. He's quite a musician. And when I've done things with him, I love it when his voice comes out because it is a deep, rich, sound.
And is that Ream, R-E-E-M?
R-E-E-N.
Green. Okay.
Tell it me. I'll tell you, we can Google it.
Yep, we'll pop a link in the show notes when we find it. All right, so I want to know, I'm guessing if you can go back 20 years, you probably had a number of epic fails in your classroom. Can you tell us of one? Because I think it's so grounding for us all to hear that someone as experienced as you still had some shocker classes. Can you think of anything?
Oh, the favorite one was I was teaching a class of five-year-olds, and I honestly, I had put, this was a time before internet, and I had just finished learning this program, and I was so excited, and I put an ad in the paper, and I immediately filled it with 12 children.
Whoa.
And I had no clue what I was doing. And I walked in, and there was the group sitting so nicely, and I had no idea what to say. And I said to them, "So, do you know any songs?" And this one little precocious lady said, "Yes, I know Puff the Magic Dragon and all the verses," and began to sing them. And I didn't know enough to tell her, "That's very nice." I let her sing, and I lost control of the classroom. Because I gave away my power as the teacher, as the person. And that taught me so much.
Mm.
I just can't tell you. You learn from your mistakes. In fact, I probably learned more about that than any other time. Don't ever give away your power.
And not just your power, just the drive, the fact that you've got to drive it, really, don't you?
I have to be the person driving.
Yeah.
It's the thing. This was a big mistake I had done early on. I was really into observing how children move, because we had been taught to observe children. What I didn't realize is that one should not do it in front of parents. So the children were all moving, and there was this one toddler who just started moving, and he was a little off on his feet, and I pointed that out.
Mm.
Parent was furious, and she did the program. And I realized it was because I had pointed out her child, and what I didn't know was that the child had learning issues, and one of them that he was smaller and late in everything. I was pointing out all the stuff, and I from that point on, not in front of other parents.
Yeah, you could speak to the parent privately if you wanted to help them or have a discussion about it. Yeah.
I learned, you never talk about other children in front of parents.
Yeah.
Never, never, never. And that was important for me.
Mm.
I'd say the other thing, which was a total epic failure, was when I first had to teach with 7 keyboards. And I don't know if you could see, but I have my keyboards all stacked here.
Oh, yeah, yep.
They're usually laid out behind me, and I remember the class coming in, and of course they all ran to the keyboards, and they're making sound, and I didn't know how to stop them, and I would do what I thought was the right thing, and they'd all play along, and they'd be louder, and they'd get louder and louder and louder and louder, Now, when they come into the room, I now say, we're going to talk about how we approach the piano, our hands on our lap. So I've learned over the years, boy, that was a real mistake.
Yep.
The pianos are not toys, they're musical instruments.
And the parents are there, of course, for your lesson. So they see all this disaster going. It's not like school teachers where you can have an epic fail, but no one knows except you and the kids.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Those parents are right in the room and they're taking notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, oh, my gosh.
All right, well, look, we're going to start wrapping up soon. I've got a few more questions, a couple of quick ones. Do you encourage the parents, particularly of the really young ones, to keep doing the things and singing the songs at home?
Oh, that is the most valuable part of the program, is we want to expand this wonderful community music making into their home life, because the reality is that parents are no longer singing or sharing music with their children.
Mm.
Parents are doing this.
Yeah, for those not watching, we've got a Ellen's holding a mobile phone.
It was just a research where they were studying women who were nursing their children and then nursing their children while working on their cell phone. And they actually found that the children are not thriving. And so this cell phone, this smartphone, this technology is really getting in the way of good parental interaction with children. And so my goal is to get those parents back to sharing music. And so one of the things they get in this program is they get a CD that includes all the music we do. So when they go home, that CD is playing in their car, at home. The parents tell me that they come back and they find themselves singing the music, even when the child's not in the car anymore. For the fours and fives, the five and six, where they're dropping off their child and then join for family time, they're doing dances. And we did the Grand Old Duke of York, where it was a big game where the children are dancing with their parents and we're doing square dance and that sort of thing. When they go home, they're getting activities that they share with their child, like take a walk through a beautiful marshland and listen to the sounds that you hear. Can you discriminate the different sounds? Or go home and find different ways you can make drum sounds on different parts of the kitchen. Or improvising. As the child is improvising, listen and give them feedback onto, wow, that's really sounded good. What did you do? So the parent is a very important part of this program.
It's great that they've got the resources, though, the CD or the music to keep on singing, because I would imagine that just makes all the difference. And I know the music learning theory books, like Marilyn Lowe's books and things, obviously have the pattern CDs and things, because it's just so important to absorb all that information while not necessarily actively looking at it.
Yeah, I met Marilyn. She's a sweet person, and she's directly into Gordon, you know. It's surrounding two paths, you know. It's a great program, and she's got a lot of energy.
Oh yeah, yeah. Also, I interviewed her. If you haven't watched, the audience generally, episode number 48 was all about Music Moves for Piano, which was the first series we had in our music learning theory podcast. So if you're interested in that, that's episode 48. Because there's lots of crossover between what you're doing and the music learning theory, as we've said, and Orff, and Kadai. it's great. And I love, in my own teaching, that's why I love interviewing all these people, because I can take these great ideas and build my own kind of method, which I think is great. And I'd encourage other teachers to do too. All right, I think let's finish off with, do you reckon you could summarize three of your top tips for teachers teaching early childhood students music?
Yeah, you know, the first tip, I think this is a really important one, is if you're looking at early childhood music and movement and you're asked to do something like this, do yourself a favor. Purchase a curriculum and follow it completely. Do not fall into the path of, I'll create my own. It is much more difficult to do than you think. My co-teacher was asked to do this in a week. And she called me and I said, you know, it takes about 30 years. She went, oh, yeah, a lot of people think, I'll just create it myself. It's more than the content. It's the context. It's the philosophy under it. It's the flow through. And so, really, whatever you choose, whether it is Music Garden, Kinder Music, Music Together, Harmony Road, or any of these wonderful programs out there, just follow what you chose and do it 100%. Don't adapt it until you know the program and then jump off.
I should say too, I just said before, you know, I love creating my own things, but I've been teaching for a while as well. I think you're right. When you get to start, if you're starting off, as I did, you start with a method that's proven and tested, and then you can start adapting it when you're comfortable. So I think that's a great tip.
Yeah. The second tip is, when you're teaching young children, slow down. Children have fast tempo in their body, but when we're singing to them, for instance, if you think of Twinkle, if you've ever asked a child to sing Jingle Bells or Twinkle, Twinkle Little Star, you'll notice that they sing it much slower. They need to hear the language development. They need to feel the pulse. And I always tell new teachers, slow your pace. And I am constantly, even 20, 25 years, I'll get in and I'll start singing, clap, 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 hello together. I start too fast and I slow myself down. Another thing is, when don't be afraid to repeat things. I think one of the hardest things in our world is that we're always thinking we got to present something new. Young children thrive on repeating things over and over and over again, because that's how they master things. Mm. And so I will sing a song for babies 7 to 15 times in a row. Parents, how many more times do you think we're going to sing this? And they look, and I always say, we have another 7 to go. And I will vary the pitch, I'll vary the pace, I'll vary the movement, but I will repeat the song, because I'll notice the children will kick in about the 8th or 9th repeat.
Really? Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they need to hear it again. For 3 years old, they thrive with repetition. And so even I've done the story of Little Rabbit, and I'll do it, and the following week they run in, could we do the Little Rabbit story? And if I even miss a word or miss a movement, they will tell me, you missed when we're supposed to jiggle our back, you know, when the tail goes. Oh yeah, that's right, I forgot about the tail. There's one more tip, and that is, this is a big one. When you're working with young children, you have to be passionate about it. You cannot just read off of the script. Mm. You may buy a script, but it's not about the script. It's about you projecting. And so I've learned from storytellers that when I tell a story, I make my eyes very big. Did you hear the story about Little Rabbit? Do you know that Rabbit came into my garden yesterday and he ate bananas? Yes, ma'am. And off I go. And I know when I open my eyes, they all come closer. And I found that those always, you know, when I have to fall back, those are the things. I go back to the curriculum when things are falling apart. I slow myself down. I repeat activities that work. And I make my eyes big, and I get really passionate about what I'm doing. Mm. And I have a great program because of those things.
Brilliant. Ellen, it's been so good talking to you. I knew you'd be the right person to kickstart our month of early childhood sort of focus on the blog and podcast. Thank you so much for sharing all those great ideas. Where can people find out more about you and read your blog?
All right, so to find about my program, you would go to www.ellenjohansonmusicstudio.com.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see a website that shows my curriculum, the classes I teach, and this and that. I write a monthly blog for Music Garden.
And that's on the Music Garden site.
It's on the Music Garden site.
Great.
Look up blog, and I do it once a month. And I talk to teachers and I talk to parents. And there's one blog, I think 2 or 3 months ago, where I just did finger plays. And I think this month I'm doing the value of parents in a music class.
Mm, fantastic. Yeah. Well, we've talked a lot about that today. So it'd be great to even read more, because I'm sure we could. I mean, we're only touching the surface, obviously, with all these ideas. But it's great, because now teachers who are listening and interested can go and dive in. So we'll pop a whole lot of links to some videos and your blog posts in the show notes. I think that's going to be such a great resource for people. So that's going to be at timtopham.com/episode61. Brilliant. So is there anything we've missed, Ellen?
Wow. All I can say is I encourage teachers to consider an early childhood music and movement class. Oh, and while you're at it, you can also check out the Early Childhood Music and Movement Association, because there you can hear about all different programs, not just the one I spoke of, but they represent the entire movement. And they do a convention every other year, and they also do a certification for teachers so that they continue to do to become better teachers. And in fact, I'm the level 2 chair. I've been volunteering that for, I think, 5 or 6 years. So I help teachers become better at what they're doing as early childhood music and movement teachers. So I look forward to seeing you there and getting your information.
Yeah, and I would imagine you would be such a great workshop presenter. It would just be so much fun looking at you teach. I think it'd be great. So look, thank you for all that you do for teachers and students around the world and in our Inner Circle community as well. It's great having you a part of it. And thanks for being on the show today.
Ah, you're welcome.
All right, I'll see you later, Ellen.
If the idea of a piano teacher's community where you get to access the best educational resources, rub shoulders with expert teachers from around the world, and have immediate access to feedback for any of your questions, then Inner Circle membership is for you. The Inner Circle is my private community of piano teachers from across the globe who share a commitment to creating and delivering the most inspiring, modern, and progressive learning experiences for their students. Membership is now open, so head to timtopham.com/community to find out more and get involved today. I can't wait to see you on the inside.